here with you as always. And believe it or not, today is Monday, November 3rd, 2014. Pretty hard to imagine right there in itself. But time passes by just like the government passes by and steps over our rights and has left us with a judicial system that, well, isn't seeming so judicial. And anyway, today we're going to talk with one of the casualties of that system, but in my mind, a true hero who, like many others, is standing up to the Illuminati reign that we've all been living under. But she has a fascinating case that we're going to talk about today that just shows really how distorted our justice system has become. But as always, in my never-ending attempt at positivity, which sometimes I achieve and sometimes not, we're going to try and find some takeaways out of this adventure. And, you know, I might also add as we get started that our guest today was someone who was a big influence in my own musical career. So with that said, Colette McLafferty, are you on the line today?
I am on the line. Thank you for having me. And I'm really excited because sometimes with a lot of the other interviews I do, I kind of have to hold back a little bit for the audience. And why I'm excited to be on your show is because I know I can just say whatever the hell I want.
Well,
and that's really exciting.
We leave the censoring up to the government, and you know, hopefully you won't offend any small children or furry animals during our conversation. But, you know, again, that's... great to have you here, and yes, we do
Thank
like
you.
To call it as we see it, and you know,
am I allowed to swear?
Huh?
Am I allowed to swear? Or do you prefer no profanity?
Well, if it comes out, you know, sometimes you gotta let it fly. I'm sure we've all can't be worse than hearing a politician talk, right?
Sure.
You know, and it's funny that you mention how, you know, it's like sometimes we have to look for a place where we can actually say what we feel, which seems like we've come quite a far way from at least what we were sold as America. Me being born in 1978, so I guess a child of the 80s and 90s, and you know, I think back on a lot of the public school, I mean, really swearing an affirmation to the U.S. government every morning in that Pledge of Allegiance. And so really just the idea that I think many of us grew up thinking of what America and the world was, and something that hopefully you can tell our listeners a little bit more about today, of really how a lot of, you know, it turns out that especially back then when we had limited sources of information, so much of what we've thought of the world actually turns out to be a, you know, bizarre science fiction version of how things work. So anyway, again, I don't want to let the audience down, and I did tell them you're a rock star. And again, as someone, when I was really getting started taking my music to the next level in New York, you know, I think your journey was really inspirational. So before we dig into your court case, maybe you could give us a quick rundown of your background, how you ended up in New York, and then how you started duking it out with the New York City paparazzi and tabloids. So you're the most famous person I know.
Really? That's sad. I'm just kidding.
So take
it
away.
I think I'm the best day on like a J-list celebrity. But hey, J-list, I'll take it.
Yeah.
yeah, so I moved to New York City on a Greyhound bus 20 years ago with a suitcase. Like, it was just very stereotypical girl from the Midwest. I worked every day job known to man and just started playing in all the New York City clubs. I played in all of them. I started a band called Edible Red. It took us like 10 years to get a record deal, and we got offered a record deal at what was supposed to be our last gig.
Right.
We got signed to Select Records. We put out like 3 CDs and records independently. Then our fourth one was called Welcome to My Bad Behavior, and that was in 2007. We had a couple singles. One was on, you know, our favorite corporation, MTV.
Yes.
The first single, Sugar and Spring, was on MTV Latino, and the second single, which was the cover of Outkast Hey Ya, was an MTV Buzzworthy single, and also in Sucker Free.
Did you have a video too? Maybe I've subconsciously seen you, you know, in a miniskirt dancing around on. Was there a video too, or was it just the music?
Yeah, there were a couple videos. Yeah.
Nice.
You know, here's one thing that people don't realize: like, even though MTV has turned into this, you know, cesspool of reality television, I don't even know what's on it anymore. There is actually a small sector of MTV networks that still tries to fit in with what they were back in the 80s, which is serving music. However, it's online. It's not on television. It very much reaches demographics. Like, there is an MTV sector that is specifically for college students. There's certain blogs. So even though MTV, for the most part, is not all about music, there is still, like, this tiny sliver of people that try to keep that alive. It just doesn't reach the masses like it used to.
So the last few, they're still servicing after the music portion got kicked out of the 3 a.m. slot. And
there's always,
this is the remnants.
Within the music industry, there's, in any corporate structure, you know, oftentimes you'll still see one or two freedom fighters that, you know, want to stick it to the man, but within the system. It does exist. So,
which is where you come in.
And, you know, I'm one of those people, too. I actually like to infiltrate the mainstream media with, you know, alternative messages or messages that go against programming.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that perhaps after we hear a little bit more about the case, because I think you'd be a great person to comment on really maybe just your experience on the news, because certainly, you know, again, I don't want to speak for anyone else. I'll just say myself, seeing how much of what we view as the news or television, as you've put it before, is just pure theater. And
it's a bunch of bullshit. It's theater. It's a show. And even some of the more legit outlets, you don't know what's real, what's not anymore. You know, the New York Post kind of wrote kind of a bullshit story about my case. And news outlets from all over the world picked it up and used that as the source material. So even like publications that were geared towards educating the public about the law, they used the New York Post as their source material. So the news is just bullshit. They're just telling you the story they want to tell you, whether it's to push an agenda, whether it's for page views, or just it's a show. It's no longer news. And we don't know anymore where we can really get our news from.
Well,
I don't anyway.
Well, that's what we have Radio Arcadia for, of course.
Yes.
Because at least doing our small part to at least try and make some sense out of the world, because that's, you know, I think the positive to that, and I told you I was going to find a couple here today, is that there are people like you who are trying to, as you said, infiltrate the media. And, you know, and I find as we've continued and been doing the radio show more, that there's people around the world that want to get a honest picture of what's going on. And so a great opportunity for all those little entrepreneurs out there. And it's actually pretty darn easy to start a podcast, too. I was able to figure it out with my archaic guerrilla technology skills. So anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit more about this case and, you know, what happened, and, you know, what better way than to dig into the media than with a real life example that you probably wouldn't believe if it hadn't happened to you.
Yeah. And before I get started, I do want to just say to the listeners that I would say that citizen journalism right now is more important than ever. So if you are just on the internet and you're stumbling upon this stuff on YouTube, I remember when I first discovered citizen journalism, it's a good journey to go on with truth telling. So back to the case.
And even if not every citizen journalist is telling the truth, well, you still maybe have like a 50-50 shot which is better than the mainstream media, because then you have 0%. So I'm going to do my best to keep it honest here today, but no matter what happens, Radio Arcadia is beating Fox News, at least in one category. So
okay, so back to the case. I was hired to sing in a Pink tribute band. I got the phone call, God, I think it was maybe about a year ago. It's all getting fuzzy, but I was offered a job in the Pink tribute band. I was like, yeah, I would love to take it. And then a few weeks later, I got a call, and the guy said, look, my partner, he's a drummer. He's not really feeling you. He said, you could come audition, though, but he wants to keep looking.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, no big deal. I did not care at all. He said he was going to call me in a few weeks about the audition. He never did. I didn't think twice about it. A few months later, I was offered the job again, and I was like, you know, I'm really busy. So then I was offered a position as a short-term sessions singer for the Pink tribute band to help them get the band off the ground.
Right.
I accepted. I would go in every Tuesday, sing Pink songs. It was a great job. I loved it. Like, I'd go to Long Island, you know, I'd get like $75. I'd come back to New York. And if you're a musician, if you're working on a Tuesday night, that's a miracle. So I was like, yeah, great. I loved the job.
Makes it a choice if you have to go to Long Island to do it, but scary place in my life. So I'm glad you made it out alive. Although this is fascinating that Long Island is going to be prominently involved in this story. As
well, here's the thing: there's a lot of work in cover bands in Long Island, so it made sense to go out there. I didn't mind because I love getting out of Manhattan, actually. But now, when I go to Long Island, I'm traumatized.
Yep. So, me too.
So a few weeks into it, I get this letter from the ex-drummer. Now, I was told by the man who hired me that this drummer, who's also a personal injury attorney,
and this was the ex-drummer, so he wasn't even in the band at the time.
No, he was not in the band at the time. I was told that the two had a falling out and that they were just finished with each other. And then, I was like, okay, I didn't know the guy. I didn't, whatever. So that guy sends me a cease and desist letter for a band called Reservoir Dogs. And now the interesting thing is that he never actually owned this name. He never used it in commerce. He had no legal rights to it. He applied for it somewhere around the time that he sent me the letter. And it said that if I didn't cease and desist right away, for a first offense, I could go to jail, get fined millions of dollars.
What did he want you to stop doing?
For a name he did not even own, right? So I was like, okay, this is weird. And then at that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to peace out of this band. So I was trying to find a way to get out slowly. I didn't want to screw the band over, so I wanted to help them, you know, move forward. So the man who hired me, to make him happy, changed the name of the band. He's like, okay, we don't need Reservoir Dogs. Let's just change. I'll appease him.
Right.
So he changed the name to Funhouse. And then I get another letter. Same thing, but this time it's for Funhouse. Also, upon my research, this gentleman did not own Funhouse. He never used Funhouse in commerce. He applied for it the day after he sent me the cease and desist letter. And also at this point, I had made it clear to him that he was not to contact me at all. I had never met him. I was not part of the, I was not in the business of the band at all. I was just a hired singer.
Right.
I made it clear that he was exclusively to speak to the person who hired me, and that was it. I like left him a message. So I agreed to do one show at Napper Tandy's in Long Island. I got $75 for the show. 2 days, and I was telling the band leader that I was starting to get really busy, so he should start looking for understudies, future replacements. 2 days before the one and only show that I did at rehearsal, I got served with a 112-page complaint. It was me, the man who hired me, and a third member of the band. Now, upon reading this...
It was served by those three people, or all three of them were...
All three of us got served.
Okay.
And it was funny because the rehearsal was going really, really well. Everything was sounding great. And so I said to the band leader, I said to the band leader, I said, this is going way too well. We need something to go wrong. This is, because usually your last rehearsal, if it's a disaster, it means the show is going to be great. So just when I said that, this guy comes out with three papers and we're laughing our asses off. I'm like, oh my God, I just got sued. Not really understanding how serious it is. Not understanding that it's something that can be in my life for years and cost me thousands of dollars.
Sounds like government.
Right? Yeah.
Never leaves. Always, just always costing more money.
Absolutely. So as I'm reading the lawsuit on my way home, and first of all, there's a ton of information in there that is just so unfactual that if you were to even Google me for 10 minutes, he had said that I was this like struggling, unsuccessful singer that never got a record deal, that I tried for years to get a record deal and I never got one. And it's like, hello, I was on Select Records. I had some presence on MTV Network. So that right there just shows you that all the research you've done about me, you just haven't done it. It stated that I acted in concert with two defendants to cut him out of his own band while he was getting shoulder surgery. So, and keep in mind, he's a personal injury attorney. And then
I would have kicked him out of the band just for that.
What's that?
I would have kicked him out of the band just for that.
Well, he was long
gone. Those personal attorneys.
The most important thing to remember about this case is that I've never met this man. I've never met him. I've never been anywhere near him.
Yeah, just to make sure we all have the context. So, it sounds like he basically had a problem with, you know, his buddy who he's perhaps started the band with.
Yes.
And it's really just a destroy everything in your path mentality of just, and you happen to be one of the collateral damage victims while he's trying to make life difficult.
The consensus from a large portion of the legal community who has read this is that it's clearly a personal dispute between two former band members that I was dragged into. So now on top of that, not only is there all this unfactual information about me, the content of the lawsuit is unbelievably insulting. He talks about what a lousy singer I am, how I would sing flat for an entire verse, that I was too unattractive to be in a pink tribute band, that I was a subpar musician. Like, he just goes on and on about how much he does not like me as a singer or performer.
Although in a band that he isn't part of. So that'd be like me saying that I don't like... I don't know if anybody else knows the band Dream Theater. It was one of my favorite bands growing up. Do you know Dream Theater?
Yeah, of course.
Well, you know James LaBrie, the singer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure seems like a really nice guy or whatever, but just, you know, I didn't know that was possible, that I could say, well, I don't like his voice. I could just sue the band and, you know, which even on a...
anything. Here's the thing, if you wanted to sue, now, I don't want to give anyone ideas, but yeah, you could actually, if you wanted to sue the guy from Dream Theater for, like, no reason, you could. Now, it's going to get thrown out of court, but it is going to take up some of the court's time.
Right, which is what I think is, you know, really at the issue here, which, well, I mean, there's obviously several issues, and of which you've had to endure, although I think what is relevant to a lot of the listeners today is just seeing how again, we have, for the people who are trying to play by the rules, treat people well, and do things honestly, that, again, we've really had a, you know, obviously people talk about the presidential and congressional branches, but really this judicial system that, you know, you have John Corzine gamble $2 billion on a terrible bet, I might add, when he bet on European bonds. It took the customer money, gambled it, lost. He goes free. And again, just seeing some of the ways in which, you know, for the regular person out there that's just trying to go and live their life. Now, I know you've told me before, but for anyone who hasn't heard it, it sounds like you've racked up some legal bills along the way. And I'm guessing that, you know, certainly it sounds like this fellow who has the, you know, platform at a law firm, so probably, you know, you can sit there all day and write briefs, mm-hmm. which, so how has that played out?
Sure. Well, it's a lot of paperwork, it's a lot of adjourning, it's a lot of pushing things off, technicalities. The plaintiff in the case, he is a lawyer. He has his own firm, and so he has just unlimited time to, you know, draw up paperwork. He lost the preliminary injunction, and he just filed paperwork saying that he could appeal it. A lot of it is just stalling. A lot of it's just bullshit. You know, it's just it's like this game of just trying to like stall and beat the other person down. And he's aware. He even says that in his, in the papers, that I'm not a person of high income yet. And so he's aware of the fact that I have to hire a lawyer. He knows that I have legal bills. And, you know, my opinion is that, that angle is something that is being played up by the plaintiff. So,
so what has
it's
the
lot of red tape, you know, and this can happen to anyone,
right? Which is what again, I appreciate you being willing to share the details of the situation, and hopefully, you know, someone out there will be able to avoid this. And you know, my next question is what is the, you know, it's like you would think there would be some mechanism in place for the court. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about it a couple of times, and I still don't know exactly what is the crime you've committed, other than, I mean, if there was a way to sue musicians that, you know, didn't know the songs or didn't show up to rehearsals, then I would hire a lawyer and I'd be rich, as, you know,
well,
I mean, so I didn't know that was a crime, but, you know, is there nothing in the court that has been that you've been able to turn to say there's no charge here? There's no, I won't even say there's no reasonable charge, because I still doesn't even seem like he's actually accused you of a crime, except now he's able to drag you into costly litigation. And is there,
which is the real the game?
Is there anything in place, or what does the court say about that?
Okay, well, first of all, the court has barely said anything. We're 6 months into it, and nobody in the court system has actually read the document, okay? So, yes, there is something that I could have done called a motion to dismiss. However, I was not educated in protocol. I didn't know what to do. I had left it in the hands of the man who had hired me. I thought it was being taken care of. And then when my lawyer kind of looked at what was going on, he's like, oh no, you missed a deadline. I actually had a lawyer. I was in the middle of a deal that was going to be quite lucrative for me, and it got completely intercepted by this lawsuit. I couldn't take it. But I happened to be working with a lawyer when I got sued. So he took on the case not knowing that I had missed this filing deadline. And so in this case, this is when the two lawyers talk to each other and say, you know, my client missed a deadline. Will you give us an extension? And the plaintiff, in this case, who's also a personal injury lawyer, said absolutely not. Because the band leader was talking shit about him on Facebook, right? And so his exact words to my lawyer, and I have the email to prove it, and my lawyer has told me that this is public record, so I have the right to share this, and taxpayer dollars, for those of you who, your taxpayer money is funding this lawsuit.
You know how to hit the hot buttons, I gotta tell you.
What's that?
You know how to hit the hot buttons over here, I gotta tell you.
Yes, this is your money, New York. So his exact words to my lawyer was, because the band leader, I'm not going to say his name, but because so-and-so can't keep his mouth shut, he said something to the effect of, because so-and-so can't have a bowel movement without announcing it publicly on Facebook, your request to an extension has been denied. And his exact words were, or his close to exact words were, if she really thinks getting sued once is inconvenient, my guess is that she's really going to hate a second lawsuit for defamation of character. So now at this point...
And he said that to your lawyer?
I quit the... He said that to my lawyer, yes.
Traditionally not the...
My, what?
Traditionally, the like, those right? are the ones you... It's funny, he... And as you're telling it, it reminds me of, you know, one of those traumatic memories from second grade where, you know, if you, I'm gonna tell Kim that you like her, but no, you know, just the guy's complaining about a singer running his mouth while he runs his mouth complaining about it and saying that the grounds of his lawsuit has no merit to your lawyer. So,
So he basically admitted to my lawyer that he is punishing me because of the actions of his former friend.
If any of his clients are listening now, I wonder if this is, I know you're choosing not to give his name, but I wonder, you know, if there's probably one of his former clients sitting in jail at this point being like, man, I picked this
no,
guy.
No, you know what? I would love to give a shout out to my lawyer because he's awesome. His name's Martin Kara. And the poor guy, because when he took this on, he thought it was going to be a really simple cut and dry case. Like, he didn't know it was going to be like world famous. And we'll get to that point. He didn't realize that, you know, he was dealing with the plaintiff, what he was getting himself into. But he stood by me. He's worked with me. I really like him. I'm still looking for a pro bono lawyer, but I haven't found one because it's so much work to take on a plaintiff who is an attorney, you know? So, but Martin's been great. Because I had said to Martin, I was like, should I go to the press? I really didn't want to go to the press, to be honest. Now, we did everything to appease the plaintiff. We changed the name of the band when he sent us that cease and desist letter. I quit the band. Like, once I realized that I was going to court, I just dropped the project. I was like, well, I'm not going to be in this project if it's costing me money. It's like I'm a professional singer and I, you know, make my living this way. I even signed a memorandum of law stating that I had no interest in owning anything that had anything to do with the Pink Tribute Band, and I explained that as a hired singer. And even though I was, you know, I was basically fulfilling his wishes, which was to get out of the Pink Tribute Band, right? And he still went ahead and threatened me with another lawsuit. And at this point, I had not spoken to the press at all. Yeah. And I was hoping to just get it wrapped up so I could go back to my business deal, which I lost, by the way, 100% at the moment. And that's when Martin had told me that because I had missed my window for a motion to dismiss and because the filing extension was denied and because I was getting threatened with another lawsuit and because we were dealing with someone who had unlimited time and resources to keep me in the legal system, Martin said, you need to go to the press.
Are you sure this guy is? Are you sure this guy isn't a former congressman or something? I mean, you say all the words like unlimited time and resources. Just everything reminds me of government. I mean, this guy.
Those are my words.
Is this Barack Obama? Is it him? Is Barack Obama the one behind this lawsuit?
No, those are not actually.
This sounds like something Congress would do.
These are my words. No, I was never in Congress. So
is the guy with the lawsuit? Is it Barack Obama, the one who's trying to sue you? It seems very political. So, like, what?
But what's very interesting. The plaintiff did, however, he played drums in a hair metal band called Soraya. And he also played drums for Michael Bolton.
Yes, I was just going to say
during Michael Bolton's hard rock phase.
Now, Kenny G was the one with the saxophone, right?
Yes, Kenny,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so Michael Bolton was just, I always got them confused because they just, you know, this, again, these early traumatic phases of my... you know, now realizing that, you know, the majority of my childhood was an Illuminati fantasy land I was living in. So, you know, I couldn't tell.
I don't think it was as bad when we were kids. I mean, I do think the Illuminati thing was there, but I don't think they had full control over the entertainment industry just yet. I think they had some control.
When do you think that started? Because it's been fascinating now. I mean, again, as someone who's just coming on to this whole realization recently that, you know, now you see many of these pop stars or, you know, openly comment on how, you know, it sounds like almost literally a deal with the devil where, you know, you come in, we'll make you famous, but, you know, and I think to an extent beyond what people would consider normal. When did that start changing?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but when I really personally started to see a clear tie between the music industry and government, when I first intuitively woke up to it, I think was during the... kind of during like the teen pop phase, the Britney Spears phase, where everything all of a sudden became very bland, very one note, very kind of shiny, but not a lot of substance there. And when a lot of teen girls were starting to get like just outright sexualized by the music industry.
Right. Of which I've heard a lot of people have commented that some of these pop singers like Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, that, you know, then later on seemingly have this complete meltdown that everyone assumes, yeah, you know, is just pressure and drugs, that many people believe that they are some of the people that were involved in these experiments like MK Ultra or so forth, where, you know, as shocking as it is, I mean, it's sometimes almost, you want to be careful where you admit it in public, but, you know, the fact that the CIA has acknowledged, you know, that they've been essentially kidnapping people to, you know, test the various ways of influencing behavior, and perhaps a more recognizable example to people is the things like pumping the soldiers full of LSD and then sending them off to Vietnam and seeing how they react. You know, and that's what I've been found fascinating, you know, seeing that a lot of these pop stars have undergone some of this, I don't know if you ever heard the phrase monarch programming, but was one of the actual programs they have where they basically take people and put them under so many different forms of extreme pressure, stress, or pain until the mind fractures. And you actually, to shield the body from the pain, and you end up with these, like, Manchurian candidate-like multiple personalities, similar to Reggie Jackson in The Naked Gun, where...
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know if I necessarily believe that they are getting strapped down and tortured But I do believe that there are elements of torture within how they are psychologically trained, as because right. now we have the situation where a young singer is groomed and raised through the Disney system, knowing that somewhere around when that girl, usually a girl, sometimes a guy, is passed off, they'll be passed off with the intention that they'll be sexualizing them later on into their careers. So yeah, I do study the Monarch programming, MK Ultra, and it's hard to know how much of that is actually the truth in pop music. Although, I mean, I wouldn't put it past anybody, but there is definitely heavy duty psychological. There's definitely abuse to some level.
Right.
100%. It's a very abusive industry.
Yeah, and going back to what you were saying about how you noticed over these past couple decades that it just seemed more like a generic sound that was being offered to the world. And,
yeah,
you know, again, I think it was 2010, just quick background, I'm also a musician, and I was putting together some shows, and that's when I met you, and you came in to sing, and I remember thinking a lot about that time period where, you know, I was working during the day on the New York Stock Exchange, and so, you know, a little different than the typical musician. But I remember noticing how, especially when I started hiring musicians to come in and play, how difficult it must be. And, you know, it's like I kept thinking about how back in, you know, growing up, we had these so many variety of music and all these bands in the 70s and 80s when it felt like there was rock and roll. And, you know, in many ways, it feels like the inflation has priced people out and you're getting a lot more just, you know, digitally created music, where I think a lot of I remember there was a band I played in 2004, and then it wasn't until really about, it was about 5 years later when I started performing again, and I noticed how many of the places where, and again, this was New York City, that in 2004 we had played shows, now like the bar was gone, or maybe they just had a DJ because, you know, everything just seemed to be taking the music out of music. And, you know, so it's fascinating seeing, you know, regardless of who is who or controlled by what, that there's, you know, all this stuff has been going on behind the scenes of the music industry. And I, you know, have associated and felt that way at certain points in my life too, where we always felt, well, the way it works is, you know, you get in a band, you do something great, and then the man in the limo shows up at some point, and
not anymore.
although, in a sense, yes, it's just a very dangerous man in the limo, and, you know, again, going back to your case, whether it's, you know, people who are controlling the music business or just different obstacles, where, again, here you are, you know, someone who's a professional musician, treats other people well, and now are getting thrown under the grinder. And my next question is, what has your lawyer, I mean, if it goes to, for your sake, but I mean, I'm almost curious, like, to see if it goes to court, like, what does the guy show up and say? And now that, you know, I understand there's the missed deadline, which, you know, also I think points out that, you know, you can say, yes, well, we should get our deadlines. Although if anyone who's ever tried to fill out a tax return, I mean, the system is structured that you need an expert just to respond. I mean, isn't taxes like, I made this much, this is what I owe. Although, of course, I was learning the other night that apparently the IRS is completely against a Supreme Court ruling. And when you think about the stuff they're spending our money on anyway, I don't know if I told you, I actually decided I'm running for president. And one of my platforms will be to eliminate the IRS amongst a handful of other things.
I'll vote for you.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. And, you know, but again, just showing that here it is, people are trying to live, and someone comes and can really distort that. And so what, like, what happens if it goes to court? Like, what would the conversation even be?
Well, okay, here's where we are at now. Chuck, oops, I said his name. That's okay, I didn't say his whole name. I was trying not to say his name. But now that I've said it, screw it. Chuck, that's the guy that's suing me. He lost the preliminary injunction, which is a victory for us because it's the early stages of the courts showing that they are recognizing that sufficient evidence has not really been presented for him to win. So now at this point, I was told that I could choose between filing for my motion to dismiss or countersuing, going forward with the countersuit. Now the motion to dismiss would be the easy peasy answer, you know, get me out of there, suck it up and pay my bill. But at this point, I actually think countersuing is quite important. It's important to do. And I also, I want to send a message to, just in case if there are other legal professionals that are toying with the idea of suing civilians for some type of personal gain, I want to send a message that that is not okay. So for that reason, I've decided to countersue, and I've decided to be very public about the countersuit and also speak about the process as I go. Now, I've been advised to just keep my mouth shut until it's over because that's what defendants, I guess, are supposed to do. And again, because this is bullshit, I have no intention of keeping my mouth shut until it's over. I will be giving a play-by-play as this thing progresses because I think it's important as this can randomly happen to anyone.
Can we get some video of any time this guy speaks in court, because I'd personally love to see that myself.
I have a theory. Now, this is just an opinion and a theory. I'm not stating this as fact in any way, shape, or form. But oftentimes, when someone makes the decision to file a frivolous lawsuit, their intention is just to tie up the other person in court.
Right.
Right now, we are in the discovery phase. We're in the very beginnings of the discovery phase where we are going through every line of his 112-page complaint. And now we are saying, okay, now prove it. And this is a process that could take around 2 years. We may not get a trial date for 2 years. However, I feel that it's important for me to fight this and not just walk away because now we haven't gotten to this point. I went to the press. I went to the New York Post because I knew somebody there. And I spoke to them off the record for hours. They knew every detail of the case. They knew that it was pretty much a case between two former friends. And they were asked me, they were like, well, how did you feel when he said you were unattractive? And I was like, I didn't care. I'm like, I know myself. I don't think I'm unattractive. Like, I'm fine with myself. So why would I care? You know, I said the thing that I was pissed off about was the fact that my entire professional history was erased in this document. They kept asking me that question over and over and over again. So the next day, I get the New York Post and I open up to page 3 and the article says, and, oh, that's a horrible picture of me. Like, they sent their own photographer with the intention of getting the worst picture they could find of me. So I'm, like, making a space. I'm like, you know. And the article says, singer sued for being too old and too ugly for pink tribute band. Now, first of all,
New York Post always making it positive right off the bat.
Yeah. So, and at first,
not exactly Tony Robbins' power of positive thinking here. So,
and at first, my reaction was the same as when I read the law. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" Like I laughed because I'm like, "This is such bullshit. It's hilarious, right?" Then my phone blows up, my email blows up. People are calling me nonstop for like 3 days. radio stations or playing my music. With that part of it, it's positive. But the story that the mainstream media picked up was that I was getting sued for being too unattractive for the Pink tribute band. And it was total bullshit. And even like Time Magazine on their blog, like they reported that, Rise Exchange reported that I was getting sued for being too old and too ugly. And I went to a couple journalists to be like, look, you got the wrong story. Like, I mean, it's an angle. Yes, he does, like, the article has all these things that he said about me, and that part of it is true. But to say that it's, like, my horrific looks and horrific singing that is the reason why this lawsuit exists in the first place, it's a bunch of crap. And then my second thing...
Just if I may interject for a second here, because I haven't yet figured out how to successfully video record Skype. And maybe any listeners out there want to write in and tell me how to do that. But you look pretty cute today, since I get to see the video. I'm sorry we only have audio.
Oh, really? They don't get to see the video?
I think you look beautiful right now. And, you know, let's also factor in that this is coming from the guy who was playing with Kenny G, or not Kenny G, Michael Bolton. How do we even know that they're actually different people? I mean, given how much, you know... I hear there are people who say that Obama is a reptilian elite. So, I mean,
right.
You know, if someone tells me that Kenny G and Michael Bolton were actually one guy, I believe it. And perhaps is that something that could be used as grounds in the countersuit? You could say, you know, frivolous lawsuit, loss of income, legal expenses. And this guy played with Kenny G, which for the childhood of millions across the globe. And I'd certainly be willing to sign and testify to that. I mean, just...
You know, I want to know what Michael Bolton thinks about all of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's... you know, and that's the thing. And, again, one of the things that I really... you know, admire A, that you're standing up to protect yourself, because I think that's, you know, if they're perhaps one of the biggest takeaways here, that, you know, whether it's the government or some guy at work or whatever it is, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening that aren't right these days. But, you know, I think A, when we stand up for ourselves, and then B, that when we see someone else who's going through a situation which, you know, obviously, you know, not everybody can always help with money or you know, or things like that. But just when you see someone who can use help, just being there to whatever way it is that we can help each other, I think is, again, a key part when people say, what can we do about these things that are going on? And, you know, I don't think there's any magic, you know, broad, you know, one pill and then the world is fixed. But, you know, when we, you know, stand up for ourselves and also can help the people in our own lives and start doing this on an individual basis, you know, I've seen in my own life how that's really, if you really want to get somebody else to change ourselves first. And that's how, so I like that, you know, I think there's a lot of ways that you could have reacted to this, and, you know, but again, just at each step of the way, you know, letting, and I can only begin to imagine the frustration and stress that may have come along, but the fact that you're, you know, haven't responded like him. And I think that's really...
Right.
A great example when, you know, people are looking at football players getting arrested or politicians doing what politicians do and wondering where are, you know, aren't these people supposed to be role models? And I think what this points out is that we all, whether we're famous or not, have the ability to serve as a role model. So I congratulate you on doing that. And
thank you.
And it's nice to see that people, my understanding is people have been helping you out, like the lawyer who stepped forward and It seems maybe you could tell us a little bit more about some of the people who have been helping in any way, and if there is a way that people can continue to help, whether it's just perhaps sharing the story or if there's anything else they can do. So hopefully things like this happen less and less.
Absolutely. There's a few things people could do. Of course, sharing the story is huge. It's important for me for the real story to get out as opposed to the New York Post version of the story. So just telling anyone you know, because again, this can happen to anyone. For people who are so inclined to actually read the case, you can do that at a website called makingascene.org. And if you do a search for the Pink Tribute lawsuit, there's some very extensive reporting in there, and it's linked up to almost every article about the case.
Right.
And there's a link to the actual case. And again, I want to state that it's a public record document and taxpayer funded, and you have the right to read these materials. If you have any kind of specific opinion on the case and you feel it is appropriate to contact the Long Island Bar Association, please also feel free to do that. Anyone who wants to write about it or blog about it, factually, I welcome them too. I will speak to anyone who wants to talk to me about the case. I was fundraising on Indiegogo. I did raise the first portion of my legal fees, so that was great. Although my legal bill jumped up again, so but I got the first half of it funded already, which is great. Just sharing. There's countless stories on the internet. There's my version of it on XO Jane. You could share that. And I would ask people who are interested in following cases just to keep an eye on my case, just because it's a political issue, but it's also a humanitarian issue. The fact that somebody can just be subjected to all of this simply for showing up for a job, in my opinion, is not acceptable. My opinion is that a case like this should have been thrown out right at the get-go. I mean, the fact that nobody in the court system has read it is just unfathomable to me. And, what I'm hoping is that because my case has elements of pop culture, it's kind of fun to read, actually. Like, even though it's ridiculous, it's really funny because it's just him ranting for 112 pages. I'm hoping that the pop culture element of the case might get people interested in learning something about the legal system and how the state of the legal system could potentially affect them. I was talking to the Lawsuit Reform Alliance, and I was talking to them about how getting sued for $10 million, it's almost like winning the reverse lottery.
Oh, is that, you know? Is that the amount? He's suing you for $10
million. Oh, yeah. You didn't know
that? I don't think you mentioned that today.
Yeah, I'm getting sued for $10 million. So it's quite strange. And even though, like, once you've been in the system for a while, you're like, oh, okay, this is just a bunch of bullshit. This is all this is. It's just to, like, keep you tied up. You know, as far as getting $10 million, like, he even states in the papers that I don't have $10 million. You know. So that's when you realize that, like, hey, maybe he's not really trying to get what's on paper. Maybe it's more about delaying the trial. You know, so I want people to learn about that aspect. I want people to learn about the random aspect of it and how it can cost an innocent person thousands. Because here's the thing, it's like the paperwork is unfactual. The content is so insulting. And I have to pay, like, thousands of dollars for this and be publicly humiliated? Like, I don't think so. You know, so I just want more people to realize just how unacceptable the state of our legal system is. I do believe there are pockets of justice. I do believe that there's good people in the legal system. I believe there's good judges, there's good lawyers, there's people who care. But the current state of it is broken, and I think it is appropriate to question if it's broken on purpose and why. Who benefits from it being broken? My vote is that lawyers benefit from the system being broken. So, that's how people can help get interest in the legal system, pass my story around. I'm still trying to get the word out to Pink. I don't know if she knows about it or not. Her PR people do not want to touch it at all. So everything's like no comment, no comment.
She's probably only willing to speak to a reputable journalistic outfit like Radio Arcadia. So
exactly.
She doesn't have probably doesn't have my contact information since I just moved back into the U.S. recently. So most likely that's it.
I do believe, because I have done a lot of research on her since I've been sued. Her team is definitely containing this story. They don't want it in the mainstream media. That being said, I do feel that if she personally knew the details of what was going on, I do believe she would take an interest in investigating. No. That's just an opinion I have formed. So feel free, tweet it to Pink, write it on her Facebook wall. All I want is just for her to investigate it. She doesn't even have to say anything, but I think if this was happening to a random person because they were singing my songs at a bar one night for $75, I would want to know about it. That's just me.
Right. And I think certainly, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I obviously haven't gotten Pink's phone call yet, so I don't know her or how she feels, but as a musician, or whether it's a musician or anyone who reaches a certain level, I think the key takeaway here is, it doesn't matter who it is, but just the idea that, you know, this, we're seeing a lot of changes in the country with the government, yeah, banks, and so forth. And I think the judicial often gets overlooked.
Oh, yeah.
And people don't often think about the justice system until they become a victim of it. And
exactly.
You know, and to the degree that here's a case that, you know, certainly it's been unfortunate what you've had to go through, but hopefully this can be learning experience and just the kind of thing that points out how important it is, you know, because I can't think of many things more difficult to handle than when someone is unjustly accusing you, or if someone even ends up, or a jury convicts you of something that, you know, not tarnishes your life and reputation unjustifiably. And anyway, so I want to thank you again for joining us today and sharing this
My
story.
Pleasure.
And I'm sure it's not always your favorite thing to talk about with all the emotions that come up and everything that has gone on in your life. But, you know, again, I think that it's we did find a positive out of this today. And I think you're the positive. And I thank you for being willing to stand up and at least let people know what's going on. And, you know, because my belief is that I don't believe we can go blow up the legal system, or I don't think violent anything is a good solution, but just really, if people knew and were taking active interest in the things that were going on, I continue to believe that's what we can all do. And I do believe that's more powerful than anything else that stands in our way, so... is there a good way for, if anybody, perhaps there's another great lawyer or someone, out there who can help, is there any way people can reach you?
Yeah, you can reach me on, my artist page on Facebook at Edible Red, just EDIBLERED. Cause I frequently update about the case on Facebook.
All right. So that's facebook.com/EdibleRed. And by all means, if you know of any way that you can help Colette out with this situation or just people in general, then that's how you can reach her. And obviously, you can hit the subscribe button or write into me here at Arcadia. There's the contact tab there, and I'm Chris at ArcadiaEconomics.com. And I hope everyone has found this educational today and a bit entertaining, and hopefully no one's brain is scarred by my constant Michael Wolfman, Kenny G references. I apologize for that. But Colette, thank you again for sharing the story. I wish the best of
my
luck
pleasure.
To you, and hopefully we'll have you back on here shortly with some good news, and
yes.
It'll be interesting to see how this is resolved. And
everyone's interested to see how it's going to end.
Yeah, and if we can bring this guy to charges for promoting Michael Bolton. So, keep us posted, and we'll be checking in with you again, alright?
Alright.